Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Ed McCabe. I'll be moderating this session. I want to thank Natasha Bonham for organizing this. Natasha's with the Genetic Alliance. And I also want to acknowledge that the MCH section is sponsoring this session entitled 50 Years of Newborn Screening, Celebrating Public Health Accomplishments and Future Innovations. So I'm Senior Vice President and Chief Medical Officer of the March of Dimes. I'm a geneticist and pediatrician. I'm actually a new member to the APHA. This is my first meeting. But I've been involved in newborn screening since the late 1970s. I have no conflicts of interest. Following this presentation, you should be able to list select key people and organizations who helped launch newborn screening, describe examples of benefits to screening, and discuss what is currently in the Newborn Screening Saves Lives Reauthorization Act. I'll be giving you an introduction, then the first 50 years of newborn screening, very briefly moving into the future, just some very brief introductions there, some information on policy and advocacy, and then a summary. So, our introduction. 4 million babies are born each year in the U.S., and every one of these babies has access to testing for a number of disorders. 31 disorders is the recommended uniform screening panel now. Newborn screening protects babies from disorders associated with disabilities and death by early identification and intervention, and newborn screening saves lives, which we'll come back to in the advocacy portion. It was originally based on a heel stick blood sample taken before discharge from the nursery, but it now includes hearing testing for hearing loss and pulse oximetry for critical congenital heart disease. So let's talk about the first 50 years. Bob Guthrie was at SUNY Buffalo. He had a personal commitment to individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. His research for newborn screening test was actually funded by the March of Dimes, so we've been at it for more than 50 years. He developed the newborn screening test for PKU, and he developed the concept of the dried blood spots, and actually talked to Bob later in his career, and he was more proud of the innovation of the dried blood spots, I think, than the original PKU test. Newborn screening was initiated in Massachusetts in 1963, so this 2013 is the 50th anniversary of newborn screening. I think it's important to recognize that the early success of newborn screening for PKU was not inevitable. There were many things that could have ended newborn screening before it began or shortly after it began. There are still threats to newborn screening to this day. Bob, because of his son, with an intellectual and developmental disability, and a niece in Minneapolis who had PKU, he knew the disabilities community, and Bob and the ARC worked to have the states adopt newborn screening. So this was a grassroots effort from the very beginning. The success of newborn screening for PKU was demonstrated by the NICHD-funded PKU collaborative study, which I was fortunate enough to have participated in. Prior to newborn screening, the mean IQ, if you had PKU, was less than 50. But with newborn screening and initiation of diet in the first month of life, the IQ was indistinguishable from the unaffected siblings. In fact, that's not true. There was a statistically significant difference of one IQ point greater if you were unaffected. So functionally, I don't think that's terribly important, but it was a large enough group that it was a statistically significant difference. Success with PKU led to the addition of other disorders, and some of these are March of Dimes grantees, Maria New in 1977, developing tests for congenital adrenal hyperplasia, Barry Wolf in 1984, developing a test for biotinidase deficiency. And then one of my heroes is Marilyn Gaston. Babies with sickle cell disease were dying of overwhelming infections. And there had been some small studies, but Marilyn, in 1986, showed definitively that penicillin prophylaxis would prevent the deaths from infection, In fact, the Data Safety Monitoring Committee ended the study early because it was clear that there was a benefit. But it also was determined at that time that you required early identification by newborn screening. Back in 1986, my group reported that DNA could be extracted from the Guthrie cards and analyzed for sickle cell disease, and the goal there was to accelerate the time to diagnosis. We did that and therefore got the kids on treatment earlier, saving lives. So that was a secondary use of DNA for sickle cell disease. Tamda mass spectrometry came along and added many new disorders of amino acid and organic acid metabolism with a single technology. These are rare disorders but are life-threatening and treatable, and actually improved the screening for PKU because you could look at phenylalanine tyrosine ratios more accurately. Then there was SCID, severe combined immunodeficiency, or known as the boy in the bubble after David in Houston, who lived in a bubble designed by NASA for his entire life. This is fatal if untreated, but effective treatment is available, and these are data from Rebecca Buckley at Duke. If you have hematopoietic stem cell therapy and then look at survival at 2 years, if you are have your therapy before 3.5 months of age, you have a 96% survival rate, and after 3.5 months, it's 66% survival. So it does make a difference, but again, you need newborn screening to accomplish this. So newborn screening is for SCID is required for effective intervention, and this screening uses DNA as now the primary analyte. So let's look briefly into the future, and some of my colleagues will be talking more about some of these topics. Lysosomal storage disorders. So lysosomes are the cellular structures that function as the garbage disposals of the cells. They break down and recycle macromolecules in our cells. And when there is a genetic loss of one or more of the lysosomal enzymes, these garbage disposals malfunction. The lysosomes swell with the material they cannot break down, and it leads to pathology in these individuals. So enzyme replacement therapy for LSDs, these provide the missing lysosomal enzymes so that they can be administered therapeutically, but you need to diagnose the patients as early as possible to permit stabilization or reversal of symptoms. Sometimes you just stabilize the course, you don't reverse the course, and therefore universities and companies are developing newborn screening for lysosomal storage disorders. So Pompe disease is one of these lysosomal storage diseases. It affects all the organs, but really prominently the heart and skeletal muscle. Progression is stabilized by ERT, but clinical diagnosis delays treatment. And you can see here in two studies, there was a range, but basically death occurred at 6 months of age or 8.7 months of age. So it does make a difference. And these were clinical diagnoses, so they were late. The Secretary's Advisory Committee on Hereditary Diseases in Newborns and Children voted to add Pompe disease to the recommended uniform screening panel on June 3rd of this year, and Secretary Sebelius has 120 days to respond. It's on her desk as we speak. So what about incorporating DNA sequencing into newborn screening? The Human Genome Project is leading to cheaper DNA sequencing all the time. DNA is present in the newborn screening dried blood spots, as we showed back in the 80s. And the NIH has funded 5 grants to determine if DNA in the dried blood spots can be sequenced. And what are the implications of this? It's not just a technical study to say, can we sequence the DNA, but really is looking what the implications are should newborn screening go in that direction. So let's talk about policy and advocacy. There was a proliferation of tests that led to a state-by-state patchwork because, as you all know, public health is a state mandate, and the states control what is done for newborn screening. Policies were designed to promote more uniformity, the Children's Health Act, the creation of the Secretary's Advisory Committee, the creation of the Recommended Uniform Screening Panel, or RUSP, and there was a nationwide campaign for all states to adopt the RUSP, and federal programs were established to support testing efforts. So the March of Dimes were famous for our report cards. This was our newborn screening report card back in 2004. And I'll point out that green was a relatively low bar. You only had to have 9 tests or more to make a green state. And 5 or fewer were the red states, so there were a lot of problems with newborn screening. But by 2008, you can see that now the bar has been raised. Green is now 21 or more core conditions, and that now was most of the states. So really it did make a big difference. The Newborn Screening Saves Lives Act of 2008, the original passage, was with strong bipartisan support. It supported key federal programs to assist state screening programs and required a federal recommended uniform screening panel. The Newborn Screening Saves Lives Reauthorization Act of 2013 comes into a very different climate in our Congress. It was introduced in the House, where it's H.R. 1281, and into the Senate, where it's Senate 1417. It renews the federal programs and state grants. It supports parent and provider education. It ensures laboratory quality and surveillance activity, and reauthorizes the Secretary's Advisory Committee for an additional 5 years. So I'm asking you all to help us build the future of newborn screening. Help promote H.R. 1281 and Senate 1417, the Newborn Screening Saves Lives Reauthorization Act. Members of Congress can co-sponsor and vote for the bill. We need more co-sponsors to get that bipartisan support. You, as individuals, can urge your members of Congress to co-sponsor and vote for the bill. Everyone can send letters from the March of Dimes Advocacy Center, and the URL is shown here, and APHA and its members can lend support and activate the grassroots. So in summary then, 2013 is the 50th anniversary of newborn screening. March of Dimes and other organizations have been supporting newborn screening through research and advocacy for more than 50 years. And please urge your members of Congress to support the Newborn Screening Saves Lives Reauthorization Act, because newborn screening represents advocacy in action. So thank you very much. And I think we're going to just move forward and take questions at the end if we have time.